Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 6 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Did you like hearing what new Bears DC Dennis Allen said about what to expect from the Bears defense in 2025?
We want to take the fight to the offense and not let the offense dictate the tempo to us. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to challenge everything. We're going to play the game the right way. We're going to play it tough, physical, you know, brand of football.
You like that?
Those are the right words. No question about it. That's what you want to hear, and that's what kind of you expect, right? You expect him to be dictating to the offense instead of the other way around, and you would expect them to be aggressive. It's an aggressive scheme, and by that I just mean that the people he's worked for and the way they've played that defense before has been pretty good. So I feel like when he comes in, you know, I remember having a conversation once with Dick Turan where he was saying like things like, you know, we want the opponent to see it on tape. We want them to know all week what they're in for come Sunday. And like, I was like, God, like, if you could, you know, change your tone of voice, this would fire people up. Like, it was really, you know, it was like good football stuff. But it was just, you know, kind of, you know, Dick was a very
sleepy.
Not sleepy, but he was a very intelligent, you know, kind of.
It was like he was giving a math lecture rather than a football coach lecture.
That's what I mean.
Speech.
So it's the right stuff, and I think if you read it, you'd be fired up, but the delivery of it wasn't kind of as football coachy as you'd expect. But that's kind of how people are. You know, it just depends on your personality, the way you deliver your message. But I he said all the right things. I think the guy he knows what he's doing. He's forgotten more football than a lot of people know. And it was interesting. The best part of it, I thought, was, you know, talking about his relationship with the new Bears head coach, Ben Johnson, and how it really comes through two other guys. You know, it comes through Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn and how he coached with those guys and he played with those guys. And so he relied on them to give him intel on Ben, and Ben relied on them to give him intel on Dennis Allen. I think, and they decided that it would be a good match. I think it will be a good match.
Thank you.
Aggressive. Be aggressive. Ooh.
Who doesn't like aggressive football, right? I mean,
look at
you know it's a Friday, right?
Where did you get that?
You know it's a Friday. Well, so as soon as we played the clip that was accompanied the question, Brandon and I both went into be aggressive, B-E-A-G-G-R-E-S-S-I-V-E, and then we're like, wait a minute, Haw did that.
Welcome.
So we had Haw on that. Listen, I liked everything Dennis Allen had to say. You want your group to be aggressive. You want them to be in your face. Also talked about, listen, this league is all about the quarterback, and my job is to stop the quarterback. So let's stop the opposing quarterbacks, and good things can happen.
I think stylistically they'll be similar to what we've seen under Matt Eberflus. They may blitz a little bit more, or they may play a little more man, which is kind of the same thing. Because they'll trust the secondary, which he identified as the strength of this group. Mm. I don't disagree with that. They need help up front, obviously. Getting Andrew Billings back will make this defense better, will make Dennis Allen sound and look smarter. So there's some other things that need to happen. But this is very much a nod to continuity. This Bears defense is not changing schemes. It's not going to really be changing approaches. The personnel will be very similar. It's just up to Dennis Allen to get them to play better than they did in the second half of the season when they had some injuries and they didn't stop the run. They need to get to the quarterback. A lot of good things you heard from a guy that is a football lifer and has been there before. The most interesting thing I heard from Dennis Allen, though, was not related to scheme or personnel. It was related to how he got here. And his alignment with Ben Johnson,
right,
who he said reached out to him near the end of the season, before all of these things were moving wheels in motion or set in motion. And they thought, well, let's collaborate. Would you like to come wherever I go? And this is the way the sausage is made.
Yes.
I don't know if it came from Rick Smith or not, but he'll have another podcast so we can learn that. But I do think that learning that this was an alliance that was formed during the season is very interesting. And that tells you how much Ben Johnson trusts Dan Campbell, because these two guys have never worked together before. I'm not even sure they had met before this.
No, they hadn't met. And what's interesting, though, and we talked about it, if you're an offensive coach going into an interview, what is the question that you're asked? Who's your defense coordinator? You got to have that arranged before you go in.
It sounds like he did.
And he did, for sure.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs, Biggs Time, 7 a.m. What was the overall impression left by Bears' new OC, Declan Doyle?
Basically, I have to do that work that he's not going to have time to do, and he's going to have to be able to trust me that I'm going to be able to give him the correct information that he needs as a decision maker.
Your reaction and impressions based on what you heard from Declan Doyle there and other things you heard from him yesterday afternoon.
I'm really pulling for him. I find myself wanting him to sound like he knows what he's doing. I found myself yesterday hoping that he would go in this direction. I found myself hoping that a 28-year-old offensive coordinator, the youngest in the league, would say things that make us understand why he has that designation and why Sean Payton and now Ben Johnson have seen him as a guy that they want on his staff. Because I do think that when you are this coaching prodigy or this young whiz kid or however we're going to describe him, son of a coach as well, you're going to have things said about you that aren't always fair or accurate. So I found myself hoping that he made a good, strong first impression. And I found him to be highly prepared, intense and intelligent, maybe a little green, but that's what you get when you get a guy that's not even celebrated his 30th birthday yet. So his job description will be vague. I don't know what his role will be, but he's only been here 5 minutes. So I think those kinds of things will define themselves. Everybody will get into more of a work pattern and protocol and ritual and all those things. And once he develops those working habits, I think that people will start to see his value to the staff. It'll be harder for us to see on the outside, but I think he'll prove himself like he has in New Orleans when he was, even younger, and in Denver under Sean Payton.
It is vague, David. I agree with you 100%. You just brought up Sean Payton. That's where I was going to go. I mean, that's a good person to learn from, and they did some good things with Bo Nix this past year, another part of that rookie quarterback class. So if he was able to soak up, be a sponge, if you will, working with that group out in Denver, that would be good. I wonder, too, will he have much interaction with QB1? I mean, it doesn't sound like the. It sounds like the passing game coordinator is going to be kind of helping Declan get everything together for Ben to put into place. I almost wonder if these guys are like, you know, glorified offensive graduate assistants at a college, breaking down tape, game planning, showing trends. Will it be Ben Johnson and the quarterback coach, the two voices in the ear and in the face of Caleb Williams? So he's got an important job, and at the end of the day, all the finger pointing or all the applause are going to go to Ben Johnson as the head coach and offensive play caller. But he has a big job, and you got to be able to trust that person to help you out a ton.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of like you, David. I kind of find myself cheering for the guy to do well. It's weird. Like, I that tells you how much older you are than the guy. But, you know, it's a young guy with a big moment, and you know, I thought he explained that's accurate. That he's got to do a lot of the busy work that the coach won't have time for, and he's got to be able to supply him with stuff that he can trust, and he also has to be able to communicate that to the players before they get to that moment with the coach. Right. So it's an important role. It's a really big role. You're going to be involved. He was saying that he needs to know the mind of the play caller, and the way to do that is to watch tape with him, which is exactly what the play caller said about the relationship with the quarterback. So I guess the three of them will be doing that. I don't know if you have enough time to watch the same game tape with two different guys so they can get your mentality. But I really think he understands what his role is, and it's a fairly specific one, which is, you know, be the bright young mind that is connecting the information to the coach, the information to the players, and then kind of serving as a go-between there.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question.
Now we're looking for answers. Do the Bulls being shut out of the NBA All-Star game for the second straight year make perfect sense, or is it inherently unfair? Do the Bulls have a worthy candidate?
See, the problem with determining that is that then you have to eliminate someone else in order to make room for one of the Bulls players. So, do the Bulls have a candidate? Yeah. And, I mean, it's inherently unfair in terms of when your team is not relevant, you're not going to make many All-Star games. You got to be a really spectacular player. When your team doesn't win, just as if the team wins, you are the representative of that success, and you are the all-star on the group, right, if you have a good year. The same thing works the other way. If your team isn't very good, it doesn't matter how well you're playing if you don't win regularly. So I think Zach, out of all of them, Zach's their best player, and you would like to see him get back to all-star status. He made a couple all-star teams, but I don't think he's a guy that you just say, oh, yeah, all-star player. So it makes sense that he didn't make it. And who are you taking off the team to put him on? Did he get done badly? Well, you know, I thought he was better than, you know, if they had a baseball-like situation where every team had to have a guy, that'd be your guy. But it's just, I don't think anybody's going to be complaining about it, maybe his agent.
Well, I'm expecting someone to complain about it during this pick six, but we'll wait until I'm done. I won't be complaining about it. He's not with the team for three games right now, so don't go and be at the All-Star game out in San Francisco either. That's okay. Now, he's got stats very similar to two starters in this year's All-Star game. Two starters, but it's not all about stats. Okay, if you want somebody to pack a stat, get Max LaVine. Okay, he can pack a stat sheet. But again, what he doesn't do, he doesn't win. He doesn't lead a team to wins. And this is winners go to the All-Star game. Winners get the five-star private jet treatment to go out to the All-Star game. Zach does not belong.
See, the disrespect train is never late with Dustin Rhodes. I understand what you're saying, but that's really unfair. This is not because he's not a winning player or any of that other nonsense that you'll hear in reference to Zach not being on this All-Star team. You look at the guys who were chosen. Mully's exactly right. You could look at this as a snub, but that would not be really productive because other more deserving players on other winning teams
David, you just said it on other winning teams. Where's the losing team?
Because there's nuance here. I'll look it up at the break. Nuance here. Because what happens is that you have reasons why the Bulls are where they are. It's not all Zach LaVine.
No.
It's not all that Zach LaVine. I'm not putting this at the Bulls are running in place and below the level of mediocrity because Zach LaVine is not a winning player. No, he is an all-star caliber player, and the Bulls can't figure out a way to become a top four team in the East. Both things are true. Zach LaVine is an all-star caliber player. He didn't earn his way onto this team because others were more deserving, having better seasons on their respective playoff caliber teams. Look at the list. And then you got other guys like Cade Cunningham, but this is his breakout time.
Yeah.
It's like, welcome to the NBA. This is what we expected.
And a good team.
You have Tyler Herro as a guy on the Heat. Yeah, you know what? He's got a special skill, a superpower. That's great. He's a great shooter. So I don't want to just this. I think, I'm sorry, Dustin, not picking on you again, but I think overall, people look at this, it's lazy to say Zach LaVine is not on the All-Star team because he's not a winning player.
Wow, now I'm lazy. Okay.
You're never lazy, but it's a lazy idea to link those two things together. It's more than that.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy five and get five free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Oh, my God, what a question. What a question.
Ah, you know who's not lazy? That's Joe Fortenbaugh. He is everywhere, including here with you guys at 740 this morning. What did you make of John Morosi telling Matt Spiegel, Lawrence Holmes, our dynamic duo in the afternoon, that the Cubs are interested in Padres, Dylan Cease?
Getting Dylan Cease with even 1 year left on his deal would be a big market move by a big market team.
Well, what would the Cubs have to give up for Cease? Would it be a bigger haul than what the White Sox received for him?
I've loved this idea. I love this idea now. And I don't know that it's realistic. But would Owen Casey, Kevin Alcantara, and Jordan Wicks do it for you? Three prospects for Dylan Cease? A rental? Maybe. Or would Dylan Cease come to Chicago and realize, well, after one good year, this is 2025, this is the go-for-it year for the Cubs, and say, well, after a Cy Young-worthy season, maybe I'll stay. I don't know. But you don't know until you try. The Cubs have a lot of prospect capital. I would try to invest it in a guy like Dylan Cease, even if there's some risk involved. Been down this road with Kyle Tucker. King Tuck is now in a Cub uniform. Dylan Cease could have the same idea, the same approach, and he's a guy that would be the top of your rotation. Go for it, Jed.
David, I'm with you. Go for it. But no, Owen Casey's a hard no, because if Justin Tucker's not here next year, then Owen Casey is going to be where Justin Tucker is, and that's in right field. So I think you're right. I'm right with you. I'm going to take Owen Casey out, and I'm going to put Javier Assad in. So I could go Javier Assad, Jordan Wicks, and Alcantara if that's what it takes. If it takes three, now I'm giving you two pitchers that I think can eat a lot of innings, can be threes and fours in this league. So I think that's it's a little unfair, but when you want Dylan Cease, you have to pay a little bit extra. This would be extra. I think it should be 2-for-1, but I'm not down with Ben Brown or Owen Casey being one of the two to get Dylan
Cease. How about
Cease.
Kate Horton?
You could talk me into Kate Horton, maybe. Because we don't know anything about Kate Horton. To that point, we don't really know anything about Owen Casey either. But I just think Owen Casey is definitely a guy who's going to play corner outfielder for the Cubs sooner than later.
Yeah, I think that I think that haul would be better than what the White Sox got, frankly. And I think it's probably going to be. I don't think the Sox did very well on that trade. Now we'll see. We'll see how these players turn out, but I think the Cubs have a lot, and they have some redundant pieces. So if you're talking about what outfielder is going to be the star of that group, you better know now, and you better know that that's not the guy you're giving away, but you're going to give away a really good one, basically, in a deal like that. You know, I wonder if John Morosi is feeding his audience something here. I don't doubt the Cubs are interested in it. I don't doubt that the Cubs have enough to get it done. I do doubt whether the Cubs would actually get it done, because we've gone through an offseason where they're not quite spending what it takes to be better at everything, right? They kind of seem to be budgeting a little bit here. This would be a good investment, but I worry that we're kind of wishcasting a little bit, that anybody who's available. What about the Cubs? The Cubs, they're a big money team with big market.
Merely responding to the speculation.
But we got to be responding to what they haven't done yet, which is, they had this money, they cleared it up. You've been mad that they cleared up the money, but we've been trying to say, let's just wait and see what they do with it. If they get someone like Dylan Cease, okay, way to go.
On board.
But
all aboard.
I just wonder if they're really going to do that. Are they going to do it? Then I'm all for it. Just don't want to get – I've been hurt before.
I've answered this question, a lot, obviously.
What did you think of the Blackhawks and the Hurricanes game last night? Taylor Hall was there but did not start and did not play because he was sick. Do you think there was bad blood for Hall? Is that why he didn't skate? And what was your reaction to the 3-2 loss?
Well, obviously, I was only worried about Mr. David and his wager. And, it was fairly quickly into the game. I was kind of like, I guess I'm hoping the Hawks lose. It's kind of a drag to watch a game where your team is down 3-1 and if they score a couple goals, you're going to lose your wager. And I was kind of cheering for you. And I felt like you had a good bet going with the over. And then I threw a wrench in it by asking Nick about it. And then you went the other way. And I felt like,
You were on the hook.
I felt like I was on the hook.
You were on the hook.
I also felt I didn't want to see them win that game. They're losing all the games. Why would they come back now? So it ruined the game for me.
I'm sorry.
Your wager on the game
ruining lives.
I think you're not taking into account what anxiety those around you feel. Dustin was also sweating that one out. The two of us came in we were totally sweating that out. And you were like, oh, no, everything was great. They could have scored another goal. Didn't matter. They just go to overtime. That counts.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's very funny. Mully, you said it kind of ruined the game for you. It actually made the game for me because I was super interested. So after the first, it's 1-1. The Hurricanes score 2 in the second, so it's 3-1. I'm thinking, Then Bedard scores, and it was a really fun, great goal. So good for him for lighting the lamp in back-to-back games. And then they held on. I thought, good for David. And then this morning, David just didn't get it. If they got to overtime, he would have lost that bet because there would have been 7 goals. So Vegas.
I got caught up in wanting to see Bedard score again. And then I didn't realize the ramifications until it was reinforced this morning. Yeah. I said I'm a gambler. I didn't say I was a good gambler. So I was more disappointed Taylor Hall didn't play. didn't really appreciate what he had to say. I think it was in the Sun-Times this morning about his final days in Chicago. And I understand that he was a healthy scratch and this and that, and he was demoted. But I think that this is a guy I thought when they brought here, it was brought here, was because of his experience being the number one overall pick, the mentor to Bedard. And now he's kind of like, it never was really that great. He was demoted, this and that. So I was somewhat disappointed.
David, if you don't know what this is Kenny Rogers, the gambler. So this is dedicated to you.
Okay.
The gambler. Okay.
I was like wondering what the music
the
was.
The music suddenly changed. There it is. Yeah. You got to know when to hold them. You got to know when
to fold them. Ask me the hard-hitting questions.
That's beautiful. Are you at all disappointed that Caitlin Clark declined an invitation to compete in the three-point competition at the NBA All-Star Weekend?
Yeah, I am a little bit. I'm a little bit disappointed. I thought that was going to be cool. I respect her reasons. I'm not quite sure what her stated reason overall is. Does she want to just stay out of the way? Does she want to not create a...
She was going to save it for the WNBA.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. I get that. But last year went quite well.
Yeah.
And I was looking forward to that again with her now in the competition. But I hope it doesn't create a wave of criticism. I don't think that she needs to be dealing with that.
Everything she does.
It seems to.
Isn't it?
Very she's much more polarizing than I ever would have expected. But, yeah, I am a little disappointed, even though I do understand.
Yeah, I got mixed emotions on it. I understand where she's coming from. She wants her first All-Star game experience to be in the WNBA's All-Star game, which this year is going to be in Indianapolis,
right.
The home of her team.
Yeah.
So I get that. It would have been a fun event. It would have been a fun event. It would have been, to me anyway, must-see TV on NBA All-Star Saturday night. But, hey, there's a bowl participating in NBA All-Star Saturday night. Okay, so shout-out to Matas Buzelis, the lone representative of the Bulls in the All-Star game.
Winning player?
Well, let's see. Again, let's go. During the break, I'm going to research all the losers playing in the All-Star game.
Wow. I think that her reason seemed respectable to me. Like, she wants her first experience with that to be in the WNBA in her home city where she's playing now. And that made a lot of sense. I don't know why there was any pushback toward her, and it was all this like kind of petty jealousy that she gets so many people following her, and the league has been together and do it. It's almost like she's doing things now to make sure she doesn't get more attention. She just wants to be a basketball player, and it will all come, and it will all, you know, she's that good a player that she will get tons of attention, and she's that good a player that I think that as she matures in the league, she will become the biggest voice in it, and she will be there. Star of stars as her career continues, but there's still the whole cabal of the, let me rephrase, the Connecticut cabal that doesn't want a player from Iowa to be the centerpiece. And then there's other people that just think she's getting too much attention. It's like it's similar to what we're seeing with the Chiefs, where, you know, because the Swifties want to follow the Chiefs, and because, you know, if you go to a Eras Tour concert, you know, a quarter of the crowd is dressed in Chiefs jerseys. That creates this backlash against the Chiefs.
It is extraordinary, and I don't know if that's overstating it, but Taylor Swift has made the Chiefs more polarizing.
Which is really weird.
Very strange.
Really weird. And it's
and unfair.
I mean, why? Let's not get into it.
We won't get into it now.
Well, we should eventually get into it. But I do think you are absolutely right. And I think that there's the same sort of kind of popularity pushback going on with Caitlin Clark.
Good comp.
Hey, it's Mark Schlereth of the Sinking Truth Podcast. The NFL playoffs are here, and I'll be breaking down every matchup as we get toward the big game. Join my co-host Mike Evans and I on the Sinking Truth Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.